Pussyfoot for the month of December 2013, Matt Dillmore. I'm on a payphone. Matt Alsberg is standing by. We'll hear from him later. But right now, we are pleased to welcome Mr. John Behrens from Fresh Blueberry Pancake to the program. John, thanks so much for doing the interview, and how are the holidays treating you so far?
So far, so good.
Tell us a little bit about the band. When did you guys all get together, and who actually is in the band? Because it's a power trio, if ever there was one.
Right. We got together late 60s. There was myself, the bass player and lead singer, Tony Impavido, and then the drummer, Jeff Rydell. We started off playing, of course, cover, and, did a lot of Hendrix and Cream and Steppenwolf and things of that nature, and then decided to go into writing our own music.
For you, what's it like at that time in Pittsburgh? I mean, I know a bit about it just through my parents and my grandparents, but talk to me a little bit about just the climate in Pittsburgh at that time culturally.
It was very difficult for a three-piece rock band. Pittsburgh was not hip to that style of music, to the Cream Hendrix style back then. So we did have a little bit of a hard time playing in some places, but we did have a local loyal following.
Basically, it's psych rock, heavy rock, early kind of metal stuff. For you, did the actual psychedelic scene interest you in any way, or were you more about the music and just kind of getting out there and playing heavy stuff?
We were more into the music. As a guitar player, I was heavily into the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So, guys like Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix were some of my early heroes.
What kind of practice space did you have? Because, all of these songs, you got to practice them. You got to write them, and then you got to execute them. If people aren't receptive to you guys playing live, what were neighbors and whatnot thinking when you're playing this heavy music in a practice space?
Well, my mother was a real saint. We used to practice in my house. Our equipment was half in our dining room and half in our living room, and we would just set it up every day after school and practice probably three times a week.
I'm gonna hand the payphone over to my colleague, Mr. Alsberg. He's gonna chime in.
Okay.
Hi there, John.
Hi.
So I was wondering, you're talking about this sort of formative period of the band, and sort of in that era in England, in like some of the more blue-collar cities like Birmingham, you get these really blue-collary kind of rough-sounding bands like Black Sabbath and stuff like that are playing a little bit more harder-edged rock. Did you feel that your sort of music was a bit more reflective of kind of the blue-collar nature of Pittsburgh, that you guys, the sort of heavy aspect of it, was a little bit more authentic to what the voice of the city would have been at that time?
Yeah, it could have been. And, the album that we put together was not basically an album it was an album to showcase the different styles that we were capable of.
Mm-hmm.
Besides the heavy metal, if you notice, there's a little bit of jazz influence in there, maybe a little bit of folk influence in there. So it was basically a demo album that we put together to try and showcase our talents, to try and entice a record company to sign us.
Okay, so something along the lines of just a demo that it eventually leaked and sort of took on a life of its own.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, I'm going to pass you back over to Matt Dillmore. He's chomping at the bit with another question, so here you go.
Okay.
It's tough to tell, John, because we're on this payphone. I can't really hear your responses. But Matt was asking you about the actual demo phase that then became the record Heavy. It's called Heavy because there was a sticker that actually went on. Did you guys title this anything or
no? We did not title it anything. We had made stickers up just for promotional items. So we said Fresh Blueberry Pancake Heavy. And so when we had the albums made, we didn't really put an album cover on it. We just had some of these stickers and we stuck the stickers on top of the album. So that's why it became known as Heavy. We printed 100 copies of that and sent out the demos with probably without the stickers on it to the different record companies.
Yeah.
And maybe it's probably not known, but we were actually signed by a record company.
Oh, really?
At one point. Yes, we were signed by an independent producer out of New York called Reed Whitelaw, who had been a producer and a writer for some of the, for like Warner Brothers. He had written some of the bubblegum songs that like the 1910 Fruit Gun Company did.
He had
a jazz band called Razzmatazz. So he signed us. We actually went up to New York in the beginning of the summer of 72, signed some contracts, and then came back. Unfortunately, the day after we came back from signing contracts and everything was scheduled, we were supposed to go into the record plant at that point and a bunch of other places. The schedule was all set up. The day after we came back, I was in a horrific motorcycle accident and snapped my arm in half.
Oh, no.
So I wasn't able to get back to playing for probably, my arm was in a cast for 3 months.
Oh, geez.
And it took me at least probably 9 months to get back to my ability to play.
To full strength. Yeah, I mean, so that you know, that kind of takes us to you know, a place where we're wondering why, with, you know, this demo having such promise, why, you know, a formal polished album didn't follow. Obviously, this accident had to play a huge factor.
Yeah, and it did, because at that point, when, you know, our producer at that point said, well, just let me know when you're ready.
Yeah.
So in about 9 months later, we were basically getting ready again.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, he was involved with some other projects.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, well, we'll see what happens. And then shortly after that is, I don't know if you recall, but then the oil crisis hit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And when the oil crisis hit, albums went from three for $12 to $12 each.
Yeah.
And at that point, he was looking then for, he said the record companies were looking for an album full of top 40 hits.
Right.
Instead of just one or two.
Right.
And, you know, we had been probably heading in a different direction by that time. And so it dragged on for a couple years until we both finally decided just to part ways.
And at that time, what's morale like in the band? I mean, are you guys still, even if you're not working towards an album, you know, you're artists. Are you guys practicing and playing and doing your own thing just to kind of stay active and keep flexing those muscles?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, those songs that were on that album were nine of probably the first 12 that we had written together.
Okay.
I feel that the songs that we wrote after that were probably even much better. Tony, the bass player, was phenomenal. It still is a phenomenal songwriter. I always thought that he would write songs that I would call them sing-along songs.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as soon as you hear him, you wanted to start singing along with him. And he wrote a bunch of other really, really good songs. But again, then, you know, just the band, just through, I don't want to call them egos, but just problems that surfaced in the band.
Yeah.
That I'll just keep private at this point.
Of course, of course.
Surfaced that made us kind of split.
Well, it's tough.
And
you're
basically
young.
Basically, we didn't split. Tony and I decided to go in a different direction.
Yeah.
And we picked up a different drummer and went back to basically playing cover tunes.
I'm going to pass the phone to Matt, but I just want to touch on one quick thing. When we were talking about the sticker that they stuck on the record once it actually got out there, can you talk to me a little bit about the cover design? Because if the fans are out there listening, it's an amazing cover. It's basically, you know, it's a fresh blueberry pancake, but it take us through what that cover looks like.
Again, the cover of our album was a white album, and we just stuck a sticker on it.
Mm-hmm.
The cover that you see from these In fact, they're all bootleg. All the albums out there that are being made are all bootleg albums from our album. We never gave permission to anybody to put out our album. So we're still not making any money on any of these albums that are being put out there. It was ripped off by, I think, the company called Shattuck.
Okay.
And they're the ones that designed the cover. Jeff, the drummer, seems to always find something once a month about somebody making a comment about fresh blueberry pancake.
Yeah.
And, you know, we kind of enjoy still hearing about it and somebody all talking about it. And just like you now calling me after all these years, I mean, we knew that we had something special, but we just couldn't get it out there.
So one of the other tidbits that Matt and I were able to kind of dig up was that a few years ago, in the month of June 2010, there was a copy of the demo, the original demo with the white label, that actually sold for $7,000 on eBay. Were you aware of that?
After that went for $7,000, I actually still had an unopened album.
Yeah.
Without the sticker, but I still had a sticker that we put on eBay, or I don't think we put it on eBay. I think we got a hold of somebody
privately,
We actually sold that for like $3,000.
That's great.
We're hoping for a lot more because it was unsealed, but
yeah,
that's all we got out of it. And then I took that and basically split it between myself and the other two guys.
That's amazing. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
That's great to hear. Here, I'm gonna put Matty Ellsberg on the phone. But thanks so much, John. Here he is.
Hi there, John. So I was curious. You know, in this era, in the sort of rediscovery of bands, the unearthing of bands that sort of made influential demos or records in the past. I'm wondering if anybody's actually approached you guys about maybe doing some kind of reunion show, like a special, you know, what would it be now, 30th anniversary show for the record or for the band?
Yeah, it'd probably be more like 40. Yeah. We made that in 1970.
Okay, so yeah.
Nobody's ever approached us about doing a reunion concert. We've been approached a couple times about trying to do a legitimate release of the album, but nothing's ever transpired from that.
And would it be, when people approach you about putting out the album, do they say, we want it as is, you know, warts and all, the old, you know, the old recording equipment, the old sound, or do they try and tell you, no, we'd love to put it out, but maybe remaster it, maybe remix it, something like that?
I can't really recall. Usually Tony handles that stuff.
Okay.
But, we did have the original pressing for it, and we had the original tape for it.
That was actually my next question. Is who do you guys actually still have the original reel-to-reel tapes of the recordings?
Yes.
And a lot of those songs are pretty much one take.
Yeah, I think the first song on the album we did like three takes.
Mm-hmm.
The second song, I think we did like two takes, and I believe every other song was a single take. We basically recorded it live in the studio.
The legend has it that there's only one overdub on the record. It's a harmonica track. Who was playing the harmonica on that?
Tony was.
Okay, so bass, vocals, and a little harp.
Yes.
Amazing. All right, so I'm gonna pass you back to the other Matt. He's got one more question, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, John, we really appreciate your time, especially during the holidays, and you know, it's just been such a pleasure to be part of the show. Just for kind of my own knowledge, where did you actually record this demo? Because I'm always interested in finding out like where things actually take place, where things come together.
We recorded that album over in the Strip District at a place called GNC Recording.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that owned that his actual name was Glenn Campbell.
Oh.
but it wasn't the Glenn Campbell that
yeah.
we know. This was a small statue, very small statue, little, just a little guy.
Yeah,
And we recorded it over at his place. It was in the Strip District.
My final question, Tony, is just, for you, I mean, again, you cover a lot of ground on the record. There's bluesier tracks. There's more kind of like straight up psychedelic tracks, acid rock tracks. There's even a little bit of kind of some folky stuff on there. What's your favorite song on the record? And that's what we'll toss to as we say goodbye and thank you.
Probably my favorite track was Bad Boy Turns Good.
And nice.
That was one that Tony wrote. That was what they were looking at as a top 40 hit for the record producer was looking at that particular song for that. And then probably my second one would be Clown on a Rope.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And
that's when I wrote.
Oh, really? Oh, that's great.
Jeff and I wrote them. Tony would write all his own songs.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff and I would collaborate together. I would write the music. Jeff would write the lyrics.
Amazing. Well, let's do it. We'll do Bad Boy Turns Good, followed by Clown on a Rope, which of course was written by the one, the only, John Barron's Fresh Blueberry Pancake. We thank you so much, John.
My pleasure.
Take care. Happy holidays.
Same to you.
I cast no shadows, 'cause I have no side.